For this segment, we'll be discussing the disappearing middle class in America with journalist Hedrick Smith, a Pulitzer Prize and Emmy Award-winning reporter and producer. Many of you may know his work from the PBS series Frontline or his years with the New York Times or possibly one of his best-selling books. His most recent title, Who Stole the American Dream, has received rave reviews for its insight into the past few decades of political and economic history. Hedrick Smith, we realize you're not arriving until later today on the Central Coast, so we appreciate you taking the time to join us here this morning on KCBX.
Well, I'm just delighted, Randall. Thanks.
Now, you spent many years researching the causes behind the downfall of our nation's middle class. I'm wondering today, how dire do you see the situation, and do you believe it's possible to turn this ship around?
Yeah, it's possible to turn it around, but we're going to have to go back to some of the political formulas we had back when the middle class was doing well in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and early 80s in this country, when there was very active civic engagement at the grassroots, civil rights movement, women's movement, environmental movement, consumer movement, all those movements pushing Washington to be responsive to the needs of the middle class. What's happened since then is there's been a tremendous power shift in Washington. The corporate politicians, the lobbyists, the financial elite on Wall Street, the wealthy, have just hired so many armies of lobbyists, starting in the late 1970s and building up to today, that they simply dominate the policy landscape. Washington doesn't move without their okay, and they're just simply drowning the voices of the middle class. You can see that in the political campaigns, the campaign donations. Listen to this number. It's amazing. The 1% of the 1% of the 1%, that's the 0.001%, that's about 1,200 families in this country, are donating 40% of the campaign donations to candidates. We're not just talking about the Koch brothers, but people across the board, billionaires and large corporations, are simply dominating our politics. And I think the only way to combat organized money is with organized people. So we're going to have to develop a new burst, a new renaissance of a citizen action in America, the same way we had it back in the 60s and 70s, in order to redress this power balance, both in the economy and in the political system.
And campaign finance reform will be the topic of tonight's symposium, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to hear some really wonderful people, Trevor Potter, who is the leading expert on legal issues and the Supreme Court decisions, Larry Lessig, a Harvard law professor, who's taken a very close look at what the founding fathers actually had to say about what constitutes corruption of the political system. They weren't talking about just buying votes. Literally, I'll pay you $1,000 or $10,000 or $1 million to your campaign if you'll vote my way, but the corruption of the system, which is what we see now. And what's interesting is you've got some of the most experienced politicians. Once they get out of office, they will admit they hate the system. They think the system is corrupt. They're spending 30, 40, 50, 60% of their time raising money instead of doing the people's business. And the important thing is that each of us is paying a price. Washington cannot deal with the nation's problems until we solve this broken political system of ours. It doesn't matter whether your issue is climate change or a livable wage or Social Security and Medicare or the national debt or making America more competitive or student debt, whatever your issue is. Washington can't deal with it because the system's broken. It's been taken over by this money, and the money is basically protecting the status quo. The people who've got it good at the top of the economic pile don't want change. They don't want these issues changed and fixed. So if we want to change that, we got to get active ourselves. I think that's what you're going to hear in these speeches tonight out at Cal Poly, and I hope a lot of people come. These people who are going to be here are really terrific.
California, because of its size, often operates as its own nation. How do you feel the middle class fares here in the Golden State?
Well, there may be some laws and regulations in California that are more progressive and support safety net programs that are better in California than they are in Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, Florida, and states like that. But, you know, one of the critical issues in California today is whether or not people are going to sign enough petitions to put on the ballot a vote this November on a proposal to amend the Constitution to roll back Citizens United. That was the Supreme Court decision in 2009 that opened the floodgates to unlimited contributions from corporate corporations and unions and other institutions. So the political issue is out there in front of people in California, and if they want to protect the programs that they've got, they want the federal government to do more, and also they want to free up the market and make our market economy work better by leveling the corporate tax system and make it fair to companies that operate in America and not give special privileges to those who move jobs and production overseas. If people want to deal with issues like that, getting on board on this petition is really important, and it's a big issue. It's going to be a big issue in California this summer and then again this fall.
You mentioned the late 70s when you were talking about the shift in political or how politics work in Washington, D.C. Is there a ground zero for where and when this whole shift began?
It's interesting. I didn't realize this. I ran the New York Times Washington Bureau in the late 70s, and that's about when the change began to happen. It actually began to happen before Ronald Reagan. There was a guy named Lewis Powell, who was a famous corporate attorney, was put on the Supreme Court by President Nixon in 1972. But before that, he wrote a memorandum that said to American corporate leaders, and this memorandum was circulated by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce privately all across the country, he said, "You're getting killed by the labor movement, by Ralph Nader and the consumer movement, by the women's movement, by the civil rights movement, by the environmental movement, by all these movements that are trying to make American capitalism fair and more productive for everybody. You're getting killed, and you need to fight back." And what's amazing is they got organized. The number of lobbyists shot up from 175 companies to over 2,400 companies, 50,000 people working for business trade associations, 9,000 registered corporate lobbyists. And you see them as an army going to work in Washington, changing policies, lowering taxes on the wealthy, raising the payroll tax on the middle class and the working middle class, not raising the minimum wage. Is still stuck down on the federal level, stuck down at the levels of 1968, lowering the estate taxes, doing all kinds of things that added to the inequality of wealth and to the wealth of the super rich in America. Those things all started, believe it or not, under Jimmy Carter and the Democrats in the late 70s. 401k plan, change in corporate bankruptcy laws, change in the interest rate laws that affected the subprime crisis. It's amazing what started back then. I had to do the research for this book, Who Stole the American Dream, to find out some of the things that I missed, some of the stories that I missed and all my reporters missed at the New York Times and elsewhere back in the 70s. That's when it began. Now's when we got to change it back.
Started in the Carter administration, but over time, over the decades, can a finger be pointed to either of the two big political parties for a greater share of the blame for this problem?
Well, both parties, let me be straight about this. I'm nonpartisan this. I'm a journalist. Both parties bear a share of the blame. Carter bears a share of the blame. Certainly the Clinton administration bears a share of the blame. But if you want to look and see where the enormous wealth built up for the super rich, the Reagan tax cuts of the early 80s added $1 trillion a decade to the wealth of the top 1%. That's $1 trillion in the 80s, $1 trillion in the 90s, $1 trillion in the 2000s, and the George W. Bush tax cuts of the early 2000s added another $1 trillion. So if you really want to see when the mountain grew and the top 1% got up to Everest and left the rest of us down here in the plateau of stagnation, middle-class incomes have gone nowhere from 1978 to 2011. Adjusted for inflation, what an average male worker makes per hour today is exactly the same as back in the 70s, while the income of the people at the top is just shot right through the sky, not just through the roof, but through the sky.
Hedrick Smith, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Great to be with you, Randall. Thanks for your interest.
And I'm Randall White, KCBX News.